right, ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Dirt, and we're going to be taking a look back at the Chicago Comics and Entertainment Expo from 2011. That's right, C2E2. The big announcements coming out of the major publishers this year was that there were basically no major announcements being made at this year's C2E2. That's not to say there weren't announcements made, and that's not to say that some of them didn't make me incredibly happy. But as it turns out, a lot of publishers were a little gun-shy this year when it came to talking about any sort of exclusive news or any sort of big happenings in the world of comic books. And basically, here's why. Last year, the show wasn't very well attended. The show was great. It had a lot of great support from publishers. There were very enthusiastic fans there. There were a lot of merchants there. Everybody who attended the show was incredibly happy, especially in comparison to Wizard World Chicago, which was more of a TV movie sci-fi event than anything having really to do with comic books, which was kind of its downfall. But because last year was the first year that this show had taken place, and because it does take place in the middle of the school year, making it difficult for high school kids, junior high kids, and families to attend throughout the weekend, it did hurt the attendance. And so last year, you know, Friday was, I don't want to say desolate, but it wasn't great. Saturday was much better attended. Sunday was, you know, you expect Sunday to drop off, so it was what it was last year. This year, I can say that Friday this year felt more like Saturday last year, and Saturday this year was much more heavily traveled. There were a lot more people there, there was a lot more going on, and it felt certainly bigger than it did last year. Still not quite up to Wizard World Chicago levels, but at the same time, that's not necessarily a bad thing, because sometimes that show gets just so overcrowded, you find yourself staying in line for 2.5 hours, you know, just for the most basic of autographs and whatnot. So it definitely felt, you know, like it was more important this year, but still not, like, overwhelming, where, you know, it's like Disney World a lot of times. You're like, ooh, I get to go to Disney World. Then you get to Disney World, and you have to stay in line for 1.5 hours to get on a ride, and you're just like, oh, this sucks, you know. Well, it wasn't quite at that Disney World type level of suck. It definitely felt more important than last year, and it was actually a lot of fun. So what were the announcements that came out this year? Well, Marvel had some announcements that they were going to make, but of course Bleeding Cool just decided to spoil them before the show even started. So any sort of intrigue or excitement coming out of what Marvel was going to announce at the show was flushed down the toilet. So you did have the new creative teams named as part of Marvel's Big Shots. There's Punisher is going to be Greg Rucka. I assume that's pronounced Rucka. I heard it pronounced a couple different ways. And artwork from this guy, I apologize. I'm going to butcher your name here. I'm letting you know I'm going to pronounce this wrong. Marco Cicchetto. Marco Cicchetto. I don't know. I have it written down here. I don't remember how anybody pronounced it. If they did, I probably thought they were sneezing or something. I'm terrible with names. I apologize for that. On Daredevil, we have Paulo Rivera and Marcos Martin working alongside Mark Waid on Daredevil. That could be interesting, Mark Waid doing Daredevil. And then the last one is Moon Knight, Brian Michael Bendis, Alex Maleev. Eh, whatever. So those are their big shots. Basically like Marvel Knights. Kind of going back to the, you know, New York kind of darker characters. Going to give another shot with Moon Knight. Going to, you know, reform Daredevil. And another shot this time with Punisher without him turning into a Frankenstein monster and any of that, you know, just garbage that happened with that. As far as DC, I don't know that there was really anything big that came out of DC. It's funny, our own Ryan Porter, of the Comics Corner here on Pop Culture Network, IneedComics.com, he went to the Green Lantern panel and said that it was basically just them talking about what happened last year. No, not much really of a look forward, not much, you know, spoilers or hints or anything. It was really just kind of discussing why they had done what they did over the last year. And that's what a lot of the panels really felt like. DC Nation talked some stuff about the War of the Lanterns, and, you know, Cup of Joe, Marvel, Joe Quesada would talk about some of the stuff that might be coming up. But for the most part, it was a very different just type. The panels were not forward-looking. They were more reflective and introspective, which is in many ways a lot more interesting to a diehard comic fan. I found there was a panel with Mark Waid and Matt Fraction, and they were talking about, you know, the process of writing and how they write comics and how they come up with ideas and how they put together a script and how they do all that kind of stuff. And, I mean, granted, I was hoping there was going to be a Boom Studios panel with them talking about, you know, what's coming out this year. Didn't happen. Boom Studios was not there. There was no panel talking about what's coming up. That's just something that they're going to reserve. They might do it again next year. They might not. But I have to say that it really, a lot of the companies put together informative panels talking about the craft of comics, about how they work on art styles or publishing or, you know, writing. And that made it a lot more interesting to see how some of this stuff gets done. One company that did have an announcement-driven panel was Avatar. And basically, the head of Avatar sat up there with artist Jason Burroughs, and they just kind of ran down some of the stuff that was going on, some of the stuff that's going to be coming out. They said, we're going to answer questions, and then, you know, once we've answered the questions, then, you know, we're just going to go. You know, they just kind of said, we have an hour here, but there's no need to, you know, waste everybody's time and try to fill it, so we're going to just toss everything out there. If there's something you want to talk about it, and then we'll go. So they announced that there is a new ongoing Crossed series. It's going to be called Crossed Badlands. And Crossed, you know, has been this mini-series, kind of the way what Hellboy had been doing for a long time is what Cross has been doing. There was a series, and then that ended, and then there was another series, and that ended. There's a new series, and that's going to be wrapping up, and then they're going to start with Badlands, and it's going to have these rotating creative teams. So it's going to be basically like you're getting these mini-series, except they're all going to be under the Badlands banner, and it's going to be monthly. So that way they can, you know, just every month you'll have a new Crossed book. You'll have these story arcs going on. Maybe they'll cross over, maybe they won't. But, you know, it's just going to allow them, they feel kind of safe now that they can produce more Crossed material and people will stick with it. One of the other things is that with their Boundless imprint, they're going to be starting a second title. Right now, the only title for Boundless is Lady Death. And they said that they basically started that imprint for really just because Lady Death doesn't fit 100% with a lot of the other stuff Avatar does. You know, people look at stuff like, you know, Crossed, definitely a hardcore horror type title. Night of the Living Dead, a hardcore horror type title. Their new series Caligula coming out is, you know, a very dark and twisted and bloody title. You know, and that's where a lot of their stuff is, where Lady Death is gory and it is bloody and it does have a lot of those horror elements to it, but it's, you know, not kind of the balls to the wall in your face type book like, you know, Crossed or something like that is. So to go along with Lady Death, they're going to be starting a second series called War Goddess, and the War Goddess is actually an older character named Pandora, if you remember some of your indie titles from the early 90s. And they said it's going to be a book where, you know, Pandora, War Goddess, is going to be kind of, it follows her, but as she goes through her story, she's going to cross some of the other female horror 90s characters, some of the stuff like Helena I can't think who that other one was with Lady Death and everybody. But anyway, a lot of those type characters are going to be crossing over into this War Goddess title. And Boundless is just kind of turning into this kind of female protagonist, you know, horror action type of imprint, and it still, you know, it still works with Avatar and their outlook on stuff, but it's, you know, kind of its own little thing. But he said, you know, there are no hard set rules with Avatar. If someone wants to have Lady Death appear in Crossed, they can do it. If someone wants to have you know, Dr. Sleepless appear in War Goddess, you know, maybe they'll work it out. Who knows? But it's just kind of one of those things. So you do have those ongoing titles, and that's That was their big news, and that was interesting. They answered a lot of questions, and very candidly, I might add. I kind of asked the DH question of the panel. I was like, you know, when do you look at the variants that come out and say enough is enough? And he said, you know, he understands, but at the same time, it's those hardcore fans that buy all of those different covers that really keep the company going. It's very profitable to do that, and people buy them, and so that's why they do them. If people stop buying them, they wouldn't do them. And that's a fair answer, you know, and, you know, more power to them. So I hope he doesn't hate me for asking that question, by the way. If you're listening, don't hate me. The other thing that I noticed from Arkeia, they didn't actually announce this, but I happened to pick up the Arkeia 2011 catalog. Now, those of you unfamiliar with Arkeia, they do books like Mouse Guard and Days Missing and Akko and The Killer, Fraggle Rock, things like that. And putting out monthly comics isn't really so much their thing. They make hardcovers. When they put together a book, they think that they're putting together a hardcover book for the book market, for a Barnes & Noble or a Border or a place like that. And they'll sometimes, you know, break apart the chapters and release them as comics, what we think traditionally as comic books. But that's not really their key market. They do that, you know, just to support the industry. You know, they understand that that's what some readers want, and they give that to them. But they really see themselves as catering more to that book market, putting out some high-quality hardcovers. And if you, you know, follow the Pop Culture Network at all, I did a whole week of Arkeia hardcovers last summer in video review. And, you know, they're all high-quality books. So I picked up their 2011 catalog, and I'm flipping through it, and I notice one of the things that they listed on here, June 2011, first thing that popped in my mind, The Awakening Omnibus Softcover. And I thought, well, that's odd. Softcover? They don't usually do softcovers. That's like a trade paperback. You know, they do hardcovers, and they do the individual books. So I asked them, you know, Mel Kalo at Arkeia is one of the nicest guys I've ever met. And he's one of those guys that you ask him the right question, you can see that spark of excitement go off in his eyes. He gets that little smirk on his face. You can tell he loves what he does. But I said something to him about, you know, I noticed there's some soft covers, you know, listed in this catalog, and you guys don't usually do that. And he, you know, gave me that little smirk, and he's like, yeah, that's something we haven't really announced yet. We'll probably have a press release coming out sometime, you know, the next couple weeks, whatever. But, you know, they're going to dabble a little bit in that soft cover market, that trade paperback market, and see if that's what, you know, some people might want in a Borders or a Barnes & Noble or, you know, your local comic store. Trades have really picked up for a lot of people who, you know, the Vertigo crowd, they get very upset when their weekly title or their monthly titles get canceled. But at the same time, those people don't buy the monthly titles, they buy the trades. You know, I love Fables, I buy the trade every time it comes out. Well, buying the trade certainly helps support your book, but if those monthly sales figures aren't high enough, then it gets canceled. And so, you know, people are picking up those trades in expense of the monthly books. So they're looking at, you know, maybe are trades going to sell better for them than doing four individual issues? So it's something to look forward to. And I mentioned Awakening because that was the first thing that – the first place that I noticed it, because I love that series. It's been two hardcovers. Now they're going to be releasing it as this soft cover. And so if you guys are into a different take on zombies and whatnot, I would suggest taking a look at Awakening. That's some good stuff. And the other thing is you're going to get – if you buy the soft cover for something like Awakening, it's $24.95. You buy the hard covers, like me, because I'm a big dope, I guess, it's going to cost you $19.95 for volume 1, $24.95 for volume 2. So here you're going to get two volumes together in the soft cover. So it's something they're dabbling with and trying out the, you know, the different waters, so to speak. But, you know, again, that just kind of goes to show that what they... what they're doing this year at C2E2 was different than what they usually do. And in fact, Arkeia's panel wasn't even focused really on Arkeia. Their panel was titled How to Make a Great Indie Hardcover. I think it was, or Great Indie Graphic Novel, maybe is how it was titled. And they said, you know, last year they had a bunch of announcements. They were talking Dark Crystal. They were announcing Labyrinth. You know, some really neat stuff that they were talking about. But honestly, you went into their panel, and there were 20 people. And that's not to say that people don't care about Arkeia, or Arkeia is a, you know, a hole in the wall company. It's just because last year at C2E2, it just didn't have the crowds. And so when you only have 500 people out on the show floor walking around at the time that your panel comes, you're not going to have 500 people sitting in your panel. So this year they made it less about themselves as a company because they weren't really, sure what they wanted to announce. Instead, they just answered questions about publishing and people talking about, how do I talk to a publisher? How do I talk to, if I want to self-print it, how do I talk to printers? And they talked about that stuff and they answered those questions. And it was really neat and really informative. And, they had, this time around, they had maybe 100 people or so, 150 people in their panel, which was great to see. So it'll be interesting to see what happens next year. I'm sure the crowds next year will just keep growing, be even bigger than it was this year. So it'll be interesting to see if they actually go back to doing announcements. But to be honest, I really enjoyed listening to the panels about the craft. That, to me, was just really exciting. Mark Wade, Matt Fraction, in their panel talking about writing, they talked about their writing styles. Mark Wade said that he's probably the most boring person to watch write a script, because Mark Wade writing a script is Mark Wade staring at a blank computer screen for 10, 15 minutes, and then he types out what happens in the panel, and then he stops and he stares at the screen. Because for him, he sits there and he has all this stuff kind of in his mind. And he's got to formulate it, and he's got to run it through. He's got to run it forward, run it backward, run to where this leads to the next panel, back it up. Does it want to lead this way? Back it up. And until he has it in his mind ready to go, he doesn't type anything. And then once it's done, he sits, he types it out. And so his scripts are pretty much final. Matt Fraction, on the other hand, talked about his writing style, and he said for him, it's more like he has a stick covered in honey and he's swatting at butterflies. Basically, the idea is he has these different ideas for characters and situations and outcomes, and he just kind of swings that stick in the air and will type something out and then kind of look at it and decide, well, this isn't quite what I wanted, and he'll go back and revise it, rewrite it, start over, basically let the butterflies go and swat at them and catch them a different way. And he said, so for him, a script goes through rewrites. One thing that they discussed was the Marvel style. Matt Fraction is going to attempt doing things in the Marvel style. And what the Marvel style is, basically, is you tell the artist, I need a page of the Avengers sitting around the mansion. Give me a couple close-ups on Captain America. I need, Black Panther to come in. He needs to look upset, et cetera, et cetera. Just kind of give them the beats of what's happening on the page, and then the artist draws the page, and then it comes back to you, and you actually fill in the word balloons. And Matt Fraction is going to attempt kind of doing that this year, and he says it scares him to death to try something like this, but he thinks that scaring yourself into doing something you're uncomfortable with is a good way to learn how to do new things, and to make sure that the boundaries you've set up for yourself are really legitimate. So be looking forward to some of the stuff Matt Fraction has coming out this year, because he's going to be doing things very differently. One other thing I heard in several different panels, as a matter of fact, is that Alan Moore writes the longest scripts in the history of comicdom. And what I mean by that is that Alan Moore, if he's writing, Mark Wade, Matt Fraction, they both said, about 20 pages feels right when they're writing a comic book. Maybe they do page per page. Is a 24 book, you might have 24 pages. 24 pages of story, you might have a 20-page script, and that feels about right for how much information that you're putting into the script. Alan Moore, if he's writing a 24-page comic, will write 50 to 60 pages, giving you every little detail about everything that happened in the page, what the people ate, where they're going, why they're going there, how many people in the background, what they're thinking about, all this extra stuff that kind of goes beyond the story and really beyond what you need to know. But, again, this was not your classic comic book convention panel. It's not to say they don't have writers talking about writing stuff, but they're usually from a company talking about those company books. You'll have a bunch of guys from Marvel sitting around talking about their Marvel titles and talking about the Marvel stuff they finished this year and the Marvel stuff they're looking forward to, and they'll talk about writing while they're there, but it's basically plugs. This show was not plugs. That was, I think what's so amazing is you didn't walk out of a lot of these panels feeling like you just sat through a big commercial. You sat through some very entertaining and engaging panels. So I really, I enjoyed the panels very much. And I hope that, I like having announcements simply from the standpoint of we run a website. And if we, you know, did a podcast that talked about all the great announcements that came out of the show, we'd get a lot more people listening to it. As it is, this is a show about the big announcements that really didn't exist at C2E2, so I'm not sure how many people are really going to be, paying attention to this podcast as otherwise would. But, you know, I think it's it really made for a nice show. It really made for a nice... opportunity for the fans to really see kind of a different side of the comic book industry. And that's what conventions are really supposed to be for. In the 90s, conventions really were a way that comic book companies would hand out posters and bookmarks and maybe some free comics. And it was a big commercial to try to get people to read their books. And in a sense, yes, I mean, you want them to do that. That's what they do. They're companies. They need to make money. But the way C2E2 kind of filtered out this year is that if you were someone who really wanted to know what it was like to be in the comic book industry, what it was like to be an artist or to be a writer or to be an editor or to be a publisher, this show really did kind of celebrate the craft of comic books. And you really didn't you really don't get that at any other show. So I was really happy the way that that turned out. I'm really excited that I got to go. So I think that's really going to do it. I don't know what else I could really talk about except maybe the panel for Nerd City was, of course, full of swearing and free T-shirts and as it should be. And then they had a party on Friday night, and I will tell you, they said, "Hey, Pop Culture Network guys, don't worry about it. You know, we'll get you in for free." Well, everybody else got in free. I got separated from everybody else. I ended up having to pay. So Nerd City owes me $10. I'm just going to throw that out there. Nerd City owes me $10. So if you happen to run into those guys, if you happen to be at any other convention coming up this summer, you see them out at San Diego, you see them at WonderCon or, you know, whatever, when you run into them, make sure you go up to anybody from Nerd City and say, "Hey, Max owes Dirt $10. Just let them know that. The party was fun, except it was very, very loud. Old people like myself and the Apocalypse, who we like drinking, but we're not into the thumping bass as much as like a Scotty Cash or a Pixel Dan. We decided to leave the show early and go back to the hotel, and we kind of chilled out back there for a little bit, hung out, decided to go to sleep. And so, of course, 3 o'clock in the morning, 3:30, whatever, Scotty Cash yelling at the top of his lungs, going through the hotel room, stuffing his face full of popcorn and Doritos and whatever, yelling, yelling, and yelling. Luckily, we were in the Hard Rock Hotel, which one of the amenities of being at the Hard Rock Hotel is that you can bring a guitar and amp up to your room to jam, which means that the rooms are pretty fairly soundproof. So luckily, I don't think we pissed off any of the neighbors because they couldn't hear us. But I will say that Scotty Cash was in fine form, but just to prove my point, before I left on Saturday to come home, I left on Saturday, they all stayed until Sunday. Apocalypse and I drove back early because, you know, we have families and kids and whatnot. I made sure to tune their radio to the most annoying station I could find, set their alarm for 5 o'clock in the morning, and turn the volume all the way up. So I can only hope that they had a wonderful Sunday morning, bright and early, at 5 a.m. And that's going to do it for today, folks. Thanks for listening to this podcast. We're going to have a new episode of Comaholics coming up soon. We tried to do one a couple weeks ago, and unfortunately, drinking rum first thing out of the gate was a bad decision, as the show kind of fell apart, and also technically fell apart, as the files did not survive the evening. So we'll be filming recording a new episode of Comaholics sometime in the next upcoming week or so. So until then, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you next time.